Great to have you with us on WPR News. It's a home improvement day. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're going to take a look at waterproofing the basement, among other things, with our guest, John Freiberger. John, a registered home inspector. He's got more than 50 years of experience. He specializes in energy design and restoring older homes. And if you've listened for a long time, John's been doing this for 17 years or so. He is well-known. If you're tuning in for the first time, you're in for a treat, and you can join the conversation. If you got a question, maybe it's about your basement, about waterproofing, maybe it's about something else going on relating to home renovation and repair, give a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Larry.
You, as a home inspector, you've seen your share of wet basements.
Oh, yes. And Larry, we're seeing more and more.
Yeah?
I mean, just think about the weather the last week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're getting strong winds, which is blowing rain against siding, all right?
Yeah.
And then it drains down into the soil. Plus, we got precipitation coming straight down. So as we get climate change and our storms get wetter and the wind gets stronger, we're seeing basements leak that never leaked before. We are seeing houses leak, houses with brick veneer leak that have never leaked before. And part of this is just as you make things wetter, we have to change design. And things that were built in the teens, 20s, 30s, even in the 60s and 70s were not designed for the kind of weather that we are seeing today.
No, I haven't been down in my basement. I didn't go down this morning to see, but I've been lucky. I had a lot of work done on the house when I first went in.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
And I think that's made all the difference for me. But we got a mold problem. If you've got basement, you got a potential mold problem, I would.
That's true. Any place where water is getting in, we have a mold problem,
yeah.
But especially in basements because it's very hard to dry them out, especially if you've got a concrete block foundation, because those are more water permeable. It's very rare to have one that hasn't cracked, and it's very rare to have one, at least in this part of Wisconsin, the Madison part, that Milwaukee's a little different, that has been really waterproofed.
So, and really, by really waterproofed, what do you mean?
Well, I mean a sheet-type membrane like Meadows Roll, which is most people know what ice and water shield is because they see it being put on their roof. Well, this is like ice and water shield, but you can't use ice and water shield below grade. So the Meadows Corporation, I think it is, has Meadows Roll. And so you clean your foundation very well, and this goes on just like ice and water shield. You unroll it, lap it over, and it gives you a complete membrane. Then if you have drain tile around your basement to collect the water to break up the hydrostatic head pressure, because water makes soil heavier. That's the other thing we're seeing, Larry, is we're seeing basement walls crack that have never cracked before because the soil may have, you know, X pounds per square foot pushing the wall. You add the water, you got X plus Y.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Debbie in Two Rivers has got a water problem in her basement. Let's take a look and find out some more. Debbie, hi.
Hi, Larry, and thanks for taking my call. We have had a continual problem. We've owned the house now for 10 years, and we have small cracks in the floor of the basement. And it's very, very random that we get water in, but it seems to happen. As an example, the one time when we got the most in, it was January, it was the middle of winter, so the ground is froze, but then it starts thawing, and evidently there's no place for the groundwater to go except up into our basement through these tiny little cracks.
Right. Right.
And so what can we do about it?
Well, it's very difficult, Debbie. You probably have a water table that occasionally rises above your basement floor. So you have to think of your house as a boat.
Yeah.
And if you got a boat with cracks in the bottom, the water is going to come in. what we do with when we're designing houses in wet areas is we actually put a membrane down. We're just talking about Meadows Rule. So we'll put an EPDM-type membrane underneath the floor so that we really are making the basement into a boat. As far as retrofitting, is this mostly in one area of the basement?
Yes, and it's actually right in the center, right where the furnace is, mm-hmm. right where the chimney comes down, you know, right there.
Ah, okay.
It does look, the house was built in 1970, and the floor was painted when we bought it, mm-hmm. and it almost looks like, you know, these cracks had been there for a long time, and somebody tried to patch
sure.
them from the top.
Well, they were standard concrete curing cracks. So unless you have expansion joints in your basement, and almost none do, every basement has cracks. But you're getting high hydrostatic pressure. Now, if it's localized, let's take a look at the exterior. Do you have good drainage away from the house? And what you want is you want a half inch per foot for 10 feet. So 5 inches of drop in 10 feet. You want to make sure that the chimney is not taking water in. So you're going to have to call a home inspector or a mason to take a look at that chimney, because it could be the chimney is getting water behind the masonry that's draining all the way into the basement and then goes under the floor and comes out under the floor. So this is a localized issue. It may be fixable with landscaping or something else. The other thing you can do if it can't be fixed is you can put basically a very small drain tile, some pump system in there to collect that water and break up the hydrostatic head pressure. But I would start in Two Rivers, you're near Manitowoc, you're fairly close to like Appleton, Green Bay area. I would check the WAHI, WHAI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspector, and the InterNACHI Home Inspector website. If you just Google Wisconsin Home Inspectors, these will all come up for you. Email a couple people, men and women, and say, do you know much about basement problems, hydrostatic head pressure? Can you come take a look at my house for me? The other thing you can do is you can have a basement water specialist. I don't know who to call up there because you're out of the range of most of the specialists I know in the Madison area. But again, Google, have them come take a look at it. This sounds like a very solvable problem.
And you, I would like what you said about the chimney.
Yes, as I said earlier, Larry, we're finding chimneys that are leaking because most chimneys, like a 1970 house, her chimney is probably a concrete masonry unit with a clay tile inside, and then maybe brick on the outside with a one-inch clearance. Well, the water goes through that brick, and the one-inch clearance is there, so it drains downward. Well, it may be draining downward right into her basement, causing the problem.
Yeah?
And we've actually had to retrofit chimneys with through-wall flashing to stop this problem on older houses.
That's amazing. Debbie, I hope that helps. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We'll turn to Tom in Fitchburg next. Hi, Tom.
Yes, hi, Larry. My question is not about wet basements, but it is about water getting into the house under a patio door.
Mm-hmm.
These are French doors that open onto a deck,
uh-huh.
and it appears that the threshold, the wooden threshold, is probably worn and it's beginning to rot. And I'm wondering who I could call to have that fixed. I did try calling a door and window company, but they only do installation.
Right. They don't want to fiddle with that. How old is your house, Tom?
It was built in the late 80s, but these doors are, they're very good doors, high quality, and in good shape.
Okay. Yeah, doors can last 100 years easily. My guess is you probably do not have a water sealant flashing underneath the door, so it's going to be a take the doors out and reinstall them sort of situation.
Hmm.
The problem is always getting somebody willing to do these small jobs. If you shoot me an email, Tom, I can probably refer you to a gentleman who's got 40 years' experience and might be willing to do it for you. So shoot me an email, FREI at chorus.net. Chorus spelled like a group of singers, CHORUS, fry at chorus.net. And I will refer you to a gentleman, and if he cannot do it, he will refer you to one of his friends. because they are older gentlemen and they like doing small jobs.
Oh.
Which is hard to find.
That is very hard. So FREI at
chorus.net.
Yeah. We'll probably bring that
at
up.
At least in the Fitchburg-Madison area, I know people. Don't call me from River Falls and ask for a referral because I know no one up there.
Okay. Tom, thank you. Give John a call and he'll get back to you. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 212 pitch roof that I always had ice dam problems with and water coming in. And last year, decided to have heat tape installed by an electrician and a contractor, and they did a great job, and it solved my problems. But last year, I turned it on at the beginning of the snow season and waited until 3 months later and had an extra $1,500 on my electric bill. So my question is, after snow and ice, how long should I keep that tape on? I have switches in the basement that they put next to my box so I can turn it on and off easily.
Yeah.
Is there a recommendation for how long I need to keep it on before I turn it off again?
Well, I think you sort of know the history of your house. When you get a 2-inch snowfall, so what's happening on your house, Bill, is because it's a 212 pitch, you lack insulation out near the edges. Now, you could think about that a little bit. Do you have... I'm sorry, Bill, did you say how old your house is?
1961.
Okay. So this was built before the Uniform Dwelling Code. You probably have limited insulation. I wish it were winter because it's a lot easier in winter. But home inspectors, a lot of them now have thermal cameras. So on cold weather, they can come through and tell you how much heat loss you have. And typically with a 212 pitch roof in 1961, they did not have what were called energy heels, which is an extra block that lifts it up so you can increase the insulation. So you probably have very limited insulation. Let's say you've got fiberglass in there. You've got R6. Well, so the heat comes up and melts everything. If you were able to get spray foam in there, that would increase it to R14. So it would more than double it. The other thing is you may not have chutes in it. That is to get air from the soffit to the attic because that helps take away air, warm air coming up from the house. So you may want to speak to a knowledgeable insulation contractor, and there are several in the Madison area that you can call, and see if you can get that fixed. Then at that point, you're going to find that you've got to have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inches of snow before you get ice damming, because the 2 inches just doesn't get affected by it. So I would go out and spend the $1,500 on insulation, and then turn those heat tapes on only when you've got fairly deep snow, and you'll find out pretty quickly how that happens. The other thing you want to do is when that roof is replaced, you want ice and water shield up at least 2 feet beyond the inside of the outside wall, because even if there's water up there, it is not going to come in. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Certainly.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. Ooh, that electric bill. That would make your eyes open wide in surprise.
Yes.
For sure. All right. Well, John Freiberger, our guest, we've been dealing with a lot relating to water damage. We'll take other questions as well, and you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller with John Freiberger for WPR News. Talking home renovation and repair today with John Freiberger. Great to have him back with us. And again, you can join us, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Chris in Eau Claire, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I called you guys about 6 months ago and talked to you about doing a basement renovation on a walkout basement. And John said something about yellow panels that he would rather use to kind of insulate the basement instead of drywall or wood. I was just wondering, I kind of looked it up, but I didn't really understand if you install those yellow panels over the top of the insulation or right up against the concrete and the wood wall in my walkout basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm probably talking about panels. I always call them Cornell panels, but that's not what they're called. But Mike Cornell's the guy who developed them and I think patented them 200 years ago. So basically, you'll have to go online and look for this. So basically, these are drywall panels that have an inch or 2 inches or even more insulation, close-cell foam that is adhered directly to it. So it comes, basically, it's an insulated drywall panel. And you put it onto the framing with long screws, and then you finish it just like drywall. But it gives you that foam, which is closed-cell, so water can't get through it. Plus, if you use 2 inches, you're looking at R12 insulation on the walls. If you can't find them, there are alternate ways of doing it, depending upon your basement. I like closed-cell foam because it is fairly mold-resistant, and it is water-resistant, except at the seams, of course.
Yeah.
And so you can't waterproof a closed-cell foam because it has seams, and you can't seal the seams. But you can put it against the wall behind the framing, and if you've ever have had water issues, you can put a membrane up against the wall to collect the water and then have at the base of the wall an opening where it can go into the drain tile. The cactus board is one brand. Basically, it just looks like some of it looks like corrugated, some of it's like dimple board. But
okay,
you can have a wall leaks down behind a visqueen, let's say, goes into the sump pump, you never know about it, which is the great
what
thing.
You like.
it's hidden, it's leaking, but it's not causing mold, not causing mildew, it's not wetting your framing. It's all been taken care of.
Chris, does that help now?
Yeah, it does. So I've got insulation down there now. Would you recommend taking that out of there and then putting that foam board over the top of the framing then?
Well, how dry is your basement, Chris?
It's pretty dry.
Okay.
I mean, I've got a dehumidifier running down there and that all the time, but
you're not getting water through the wall, and you've got a walkout, so you've got good slope to the side yard, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's not going to leak. And then if you've got some decent slope on the backyard, usually when I find finished basements, if it's a back walkout, the back half or two-thirds of the basement is finished. The part in the front where you've got the high grade, where you're more likely to get leaks, is not finished. That's where the water heater and furnace are. If it leaks a little bit in there, who cares? What I care about with basement leaks is getting mold and mildew and something that's unsafe for you and your family.
Yeah, yep. Makes good sense. Chris, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Christina in Glenwood City, we'll go to you now. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. John, I'm excited to speak to you. I know you have a horse barn, and this is regarding an equestrian center.
All right, an equestrian.
So it's 60. The stall barn is like 60 by 60, and then the arena would be 60 by 130 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heated and cooled with geothermal as far as the stall barn and the living area in the stall barn.
Oh, my.
And then the arena itself is insulated and heated with the Resners. Now, around the entire facility, there is an insulation was put in the ground, and it's that thick, dense, pink insulation that's 3 or 4 inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this facility is like 17 years,
mm-hmm.
so I've noticed recently that insulation is starting to heave up. Being that it's a metal building mm-hmm. and there's that lower lip going all the way around, that is starting to get pushed, like bent up.
Hmm.
What can be done?
So we've got closed cell insulation, which is insulating the slab the way it should be, and we've got 3 inches of it, and it's heaving up. So that sounds like we've got some excess soil moisture. Do you have rain gutters on this on the building?
No, we don't. No, the soffit is expanded quite a bit, but do I need to add?
I think you do. I don't even know where Glenwood City is, unfortunately, but there should be a contractor in that area that can look at it for you. Because what I'm thinking is you've got a very large roof there, so you're collecting a lot of water, and then you're dumping it right next to this insulation. And this water is saturating the soil, it's freezing, and it's expanding in all directions. And it's probably lifting the soil slightly, but it's lifting the insulation more. So it could be that gutters with decent downspouts are what you really need there. Now, if you had really, really good pitch, but the problem is in the winter, that doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the soil could be frozen, but we still get rain, and it comes down next to the building. So I think I would think about gutters because trying...
And a downspout to get it away from...
And a downspout to get away, yeah. 8-foot downspouts, 10-foot downspouts, depending upon the pitch. But this sounds like frost heaving. Frost is water, too much water. So let's reduce the soil moisture next to this. Sounds like absolutely lovely building.
Yeah, yeah, it sure does. Christina, does that help, I hope?
Yes, I have two manhole covers, so manholes.
You got two manhole covers?
I mean manholes that where water drains into and then it shoots out to the pasture.
Ah, okay. So we maybe need gutters to go into that drainage system.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something to think about, Christina. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Mary Jo in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I live in a condo that is in the middle of two other condos, and it was built in 1986. But my air conditioning bills are horrendous, I think. They're like $180 to... You know, try and get some air conditioning, and mm-hmm. I try not to run it. I run it as little as possible, but it's a three-story. I have a basement, a main floor, and an upper floor. And my bedroom up above, I mean, is 80 degrees all the time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to matter if the air is running or not. And then I have two additional. I face north. My bedroom faces north, so it isn't getting direct sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
I have a south-facing panel of windows, and that's where the cathedral ceiling is.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have blinds that I tend to pull, mm-hmm. you know, when it's real hot. And I've always had a tree there until just this year. So in the past, I had a huge ash tree that actually blocked a lot of that sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So does that seem reasonable, though, $180-some a month for air conditioning?
Well, if your condo is 4,000 square feet, I think that would be just fine. But... I don't think it's that big. So in 1986, we've learned a lot since then. I think you need to have an energy assessment done on your condo. So we need to look in the attic. Is your attic well vented, or is your attic, because of the shingles, getting to be 140 degrees and then radiating down through your ceiling? That's entirely possible. And it could be that what we need in your attic is more insulation and more venting to lower that attic temperature. The next thing that we need to take a look at is you've got a cathedral ceiling, and where and how well designed is the return air? Because what we need to do in the summer is pull that very hot air off the ceiling and out of your bedroom and send it across the cooling coils. It doesn't help just to pull all the cooling, you know, to take the cooler air off the first floor and cool it again and leave that hot air up there. So I think you want to talk to an energy analyst. And there are many of them, you know, if you in the Madison area, you just have to Google energy analyst. You might be able to get $50 from Energy Star to help pay for them. But when you interview them, say, do you know anything about ductwork? Because then they can take a look at your ductwork as well. So I think what you've got is you've got some thermal inefficiencies, some mechanical inefficiencies. They may be very easy to fix, so that is going to increase your comfort and decrease your utility bills to the point where the decrease in your utility bills over 2 or 3 years actually pays for the consultation and any extra duct work that needs to be done. The other thing you can do is you can also call a good heating company. There are several in the Madison area. Tell them what your issues are. Have them come out, take a look at it, and give you a bid. Many companies will do that at no charge. But you really need to look at the insulation in your attic, because if it's 1986 insulation, I can guarantee you that it is inefficient and inadequate.
Well, there you go. Mary Jo, something to ponder and something to do. Appreciate your call. Sharon in De Pere, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I need a storm door installed, and the handyman is telling me that the door I want to order has a back set that is not going to fit my door jamb. Mm-hmm. So I want to buy this door off Home Depot. It's the perfect door, the right dimensions, but he's saying we can't use the door. There's a problem with the back set. Can he do something with the door jamb to make this door fit?
Now, Sharon, I'm assuming that the back set is too wide for your wall?
That's correct. He says I need one and 15 sixteenths would be the correct back set, and the one that I want to order is 1 inch.
And what is the brand of your door?
Right now I have a Larson, but it has never fit, and the one that I'm looking at is an Anderson replacement.
An Anderson, okay. What I would do is talk to a local lumberyard in De Pere, and they can probably custom order you an Anderson with the correct back set.
Oh?
The problem is if you modify the door, then you lose the warranty.
Oh.
Now, you know, Home Depot is fine for some things, but if you need something custom, you need to talk to an actual lumberyard. So I would, and many lumberyards carry Anderson replacement because it's a good line. It's used very commonly, and it's profitable for the lumberyards. So call somebody other than Home Depot. I'm not bad-mouthing Home Depot here, but it's just you need a little bit of extra service, and I don't think you can really expect that other than from a lumberyard. All right?
Okay. Does that help, Sharon?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yes, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Sharon's going to pay a little bit more for a custom order, but she's going to save it on the installation costs, and she will have the warranty. And I think a lot of the Anderson replacements have a 10-year warranty, and that's valuable.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And she'll have the door she wants.
Exactly.
Yeah. Louise in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Louise.
Hi. With the recent storm yesterday, we're out in Dodgeville. It was super windy, and our chimney cap flew off, landed in the grass. And to get it back up, I'm wondering about, should I contact a chimney specialist, a fireplace specialist, like who... The roofing people are going to be super busy because a lot of people had damage
Absolutely.
Out this way.
Louise,
house was built in 1970, yeah.
What type of chimney is this? Is this a masonry chimney?
I don't know. It's brick, I think.
Brick, okay. And was the cap a metal cap on top of a brick chimney?
It's like a little square metal thing with wire.
Yeah, lightweight. It'll blow off again.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. What you really need, there are a lot of contractors. Now, you're in Dodgeville, so you're not that far from Madison. And you're probably going to find somebody in Madison who's a chimney specialist, and they will come in and put a poured cap on that chimney for you. Now, you want to be sure, tell them that you're really, really, really fussy, and you never want to leak. So they're going to pour a cap that's going to have a drip edge on the bottom, and it's going to have a water seal between it and the brick. And it's going to cost you several hundred dollars, but it's never going to blow off.
What do you think, Louise?
I like it.
All right, good.
All right. Thanks a lot for...
And be sure to put in your insurance claim.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because, the cap, they have to drive out there. So it's going to cost a little bit of money, but it's going to be good quality. Go online and look at how concrete chimney caps are supposed to be designed. You need to have a 2-inch, it has to be 2-inch wider on all sizes than the brick, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want the water running down into the brick. And then it needs to have a little kerf on the bottom, a little groove. So when the water runs off the chimney cap, goes down the side, hits that groove, it drips down without ever going on the brick. So remember we said earlier we're seeing brick chimneys leak now. So a good quality cap is like putting an umbrella over your chimney. It's well worth the investment.
Well worth it. Louise, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. And we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email to talk@WPR.org. Callie from Superior emailed to say her home is over 100 years old, exclusively leaks on one side of the basement where there are cracks in the concrete. Callie has done everything she can to redirect water away from that side, from resealing where the driveway and foundation meet, adding an awning, and reshaping the yard to drain away from the house.
Mm-hmm.
Callie said a sump pump was added, which helped, but when it rains heavily, it still leaks.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas?
It sounds like she may have hydrostatic head pressure, so like our earlier caller, the basement's become a leaking boat. So this is very hard to do anything on the air here, Tally, to tell you what to look at. The ultimate thing to do when we have this sort of situation is to actually excavate the front lawn and to put in the sort of metal roll or other system plus collection pipe that helps. But part of the question is, if it's leaking into an area that's not really being used, like the furnace room or something, and it's running down the drain, it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
90% of the basements in Wisconsin leak. So it depends upon how valuable this is to you. If this really is a problem that you need to talk to somebody in the Superior area or Duluth area who is a basement specialist, have them take a look at it. Again, unfortunately, up there, that's out of the range of the people I know in the Madison, Milwaukee area.
Sounds like she's already done, resealed the driveway. She did some reshaping of the yard. Done a lot.
Well, we've got hydrostatic head pressure, so the question, if she was on the air, that I would ask her is this coming in high in the walls or low in the walls?
Oh.
If it's coming in low in the walls, more likely that's the water table coming up. If it's high in the walls, well, that's still something is coming down from the surface. So
she should be looking to see where that's coming from.
Right. And she can always send me an email, shoot me a couple of pictures. And I'd be happy to talk to her via email, fry@chorus.net, as we said earlier.
FREI@chorus.net. She could give you an email. Barb in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi, how are both of you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, in light of all the waters that are coming in our area, we are surrounded by pine trees. We have a metal roof, and we have had quite a large overhang, so I rigged up my own gutters for years that had no leaf guards, but of course I was cleaning them out, but not too bad. We're both in our 70s. I don't want to get up on ladders anymore. So we had a whole gutter system installed with I don't know if it was leaf guard or whoever, the protector screening on the guards. And now what's happening is the pine needles gather on top of the screening, and the water just rushes right over those, and it ends up, going where we don't want it to go, which is in the ground. So I don't know if there's any, we try to keep it, we have to brush it, I guess, with a push broom to keep it clean. But I don't know if there's a better product. This is real recent, but I just noticed. It's just crazy.
Barb, I don't think there is a better product. You are just in a situation where the pine needles, and hopefully your trees don't shed all the time. I don't know whether they're white pine or spruce or what they are. Mine shed like mad, and then they stop for 9 months. So I clean up the mess, and then I'm okay for a while. But I do not know of a product that really works well with pine needles, because they will roll into things if you've got the cap type that relies on surface tension. They'll just end up in the gutter. Or if you've got screening on top, they end up clogging the screening. Because they're not like leaves. Leaves will blow off in a wind. Pine needles just stick.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, Barb, I have no advice to give you. young neighbor boy who's safe on a ladder is about the best I can do, I'm afraid. It really is an intractable problem.
Either that or eliminate some pine trees.
That is also true. With the kind of winds we're having, maybe the thinning of the trees is something that is worth doing.
And as I look out the window to the outside, I see that it's getting almost like evening. So there's some more rain coming in some parts of the state, especially here in the south, possibly throughout the state for that matter. Barb, thank you. Judy in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My house was built in the mid-1960s, and especially on the north side of the house, also on the east a little bit, in the basement, there's a crispy salt-like substance on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if that is something I should be concerned about in general.
Probably not. What you should do is... put a tablespoon of vinegar in a cup of water. So you've got a slightly acidic wash. Go down and wipe it. If it all disappears, it's calcium carbonate. So what it is you've got some moisture, water vapor coming through your walls. And when it dries on the inside, the water vapor, because your soil is probably acidic on the exterior, it's dissolving just a very tiny little bit of the calcium carbonate in the walls, and it's depositing it on the inside. And so if it just simply washes away, in another 500 years, you're going to have a problem. But
For now,
for the next 50 to 100, I wouldn't worry about it too much. And that.
But what if it doesn't wipe off when
Well, then I don't know what it is. I would have to I would suggest that they talk to a specialist up there. But mold does not grow on concrete; it will grow on dirt on concrete. And I'm 99% certain that when Judy rubs this with a vinegar solution, it is going to wash away.
Okay, Judy, there you go. Thank you for calling. Oh man, John Freiberger, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're talking home renovation and repair today on the program with John Freiberger, registered home inspector, and works out of the Fitchburg, Madison area and has been doing it for a long, long time. Great to have him with us. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Julie in Nacoosa, what's on your mind?
Yes, I have a question about what we call a beaver system. It's like a baseboard that you attach to the base. It's in our basement where it's wet,
mm-hmm.
and it channels the water into our sump pump.
Sure.
And is that something you recommend? We've used it with success, but I always wonder if there's something else we should have done.
Yeah, so basically it's a gutter in your basement, isn't it, that runs tight to the wall?
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And yes, you can have good success with it. If your wall is leaking when it's raining, you can't really stop the leaks because it's flat. It does indeed collect the water. And I've not seen them for a few years, but they're only, they're inobtrusive. They tend to work.
Yeah.
And, if you're happy with it, I know of no issues with them. I have not seen one in quite a few years, but evidently they're still sold.
All right, Julie, there you go. Doug in Colfax, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Larry. Great program as always.
Thank you.
I have a question about the humidity in my about 1,000 square foot duplex. It's slab on grade, between 25 and 30 years old. And my humidity in the summer runs in the 60s, and I'm just wondering, do I need to get a dehumidifier or run the – it's a forced air natural gas furnace. Should I be running the fan,
mm-hmm.
or is that level of humidity not a problem?
The first thing I want you to do, Doug, do you have a humidifier on your furnace for winter use?
I do not.
Good. I've seen a whole lot of them recently, Doug, that are – over-humidifying, they're working in the summer, and they're not, the controls are wrong. So you've got a slab on grade. You've got a 30-year-old slab, so it probably does not have a good vapor barrier underneath the slab. So we're getting moisture from the soil that's coming in continuously. So you do need dehumidification. And the question is exactly how much you need. You only have 1,000 square foot. Would a decent portable one that's ENERGY STAR rated and is fairly efficient do it for you? It might. You may want to run the fan for a couple hours a day. Let's say you're dehumidifying, you know, the living room. Is this a two-story or one-story?
One-story.
One-story, okay. Yeah, one-stories tend to be more difficult because we have less air movement, so you may need to turn the fan on every now and then. So do a little bit of experimenting. Go out, take a look at good quality, energy-efficient dehumidifiers. If you are, I don't know whether Colfax is in an ENERGY STAR area or not, but there may be a $50 rebate if you buy something good. So check ENERGY STAR. And yes, 60 is too high. If it is 60 in the air, it may be higher on cold surfaces, and we could be developing mold. We found that we get mold at 83% humidity. We used to think it was 100%, but no, it turns out that 83% is enough to grow mold on surfaces. So protect your health with a little dehumidification.
Yeah, there you go, Doug. Thank you. And get one that's ENERGY STAR rated.
Exactly, because there's some ones out there that'll cost you a fortune.
Okay. Doug, thank you. Jack in Eagle River, your turn. Jack, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a 110-year-old house, and I've got some settling on the floors, and it actually is so much settled that one of the exterior walls is about 3 inches off to one side on a two-story building. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, I've taken some standard jacks from Menards and put those in to the maximum, and what else can I do to jack up the floors to get them from being the 1 or 2 inches off that they're settled?
Houses built 110 years ago had totally different assumptions than we have today. Uniform Dwelling Code figures that each floor in our house has to carry 55 pounds per square foot. Old houses, we often find that 25, 30, and at a maximum 40. And we own a lot more stuff than they did 110 years ago. So your house is probably not overloaded compared to your neighbor, but it may be overloaded compared to the type of framing that you have, which may be very lightweight. I think you really need to talk to an engineer up in the Eagle River area that knows something about historic houses. And they may tell you that you may be able to go online and do it yourself. You may be able to actually blueprint your house so that you get an idea of where the framing is. And then somebody can easily calculate the loads. They can tell you what's going on, and they can design something that will stabilize your house. I've done a lot of that in the Madison area, but there must be somebody in the Eagle River area or neighboring areas that could do that for you. But if you're getting that kind of movement, it's a little bit worrisome because when things move that many inches, we can start loosening up nails. And then we start losing the strength of our house if we start having nails begin to withdraw. So I think you need to put some money into research, Jack, and hire a professional who can really look at things, come up with a plan that you can really understand, and then something that a contractor can really understand, or if you're doing it yourself, you can understand as to how to properly support your house.
Yeah. Jack, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Gary in Chippewa County, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1960 well-built ranch house that I'm looking to replace the windows in. And I'm looking at Renewal by Anderson Windows. Or would you suggest I go maybe in a different direction since the house is that old?
Yeah. Renew by Anderson are very good windows. What I would check on is the quality of the glass. And I've been a little bit surprised because Anderson has sold some things I've seen in the past that did not have very efficient glass. And you're in a fairly cold cold part of the state. So you want to really take a look. The Energy Star says we need a bottom limit of a U27 glass. But you can get U20, you can get U19, you can get U16 out there. It's going to cost extra money, but depending upon what your heating bills are. So I would investigate that with an Anderson dealer. You might take a look at some of the other major brands. Marvin would be an example. Avoid the cheap vinyl, will do your entire house for $1,000 and give you a $1,500 rebate sort of stuff. That's advertised in the local newspapers. So work with a good quality lumber yard, somebody who handles Marvin, Anderson, or one of the other. Pella would be another major brand that makes replacement windows. But take a look at the energy efficiency. Take a look at Energy Star. I don't know whether Chippewa County is in an Energy Star area, but if it is, you may have rebates coming to you.
All right.
So a bit of research called for to save yourself money long term.
And the U rating is
Yes, it's called a U value. And it is the inverse of the R value, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But that's how they rate the windows. And the bigger the number, like a U40 is terrible glass. And I see that being sold in a lot of replacement windows because it's cheap.
Yeah.
U27 that Energy Star says is okay. I really don't think it's okay. My word against them. I really want to see more like a U25, U24, U22 sort of glass, especially when we're in northern Wisconsin.
All right. Gary, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Beth in Janesville, we'll give you a chance to join in.
This call will be recorded.
Morning. When we have heavy rain, our gutters overflow, and then the window wells fill, and then the basement leaks. And I'm wondering if rain barrels would be a consideration.
It sounds like your gutters are undersized. They might be 4-inch gutters, whereas you may need a 5 or 6-inch gutter. And I know a bit about gutters, but I always have to look online as to how many inches per hour different sizes of gutters can handle on different sizes of roof. So you have to figure out the square footage of the roof on the vertical. I'm sorry, on the horizontal, not on the slope. And then you have to take a look at the amount of rain you want to handle. Do you want to handle 1 inch per hour, or do you want to handle 2 inches per hour, or do you want to handle 3 inches per hour? So a gutter person knows all of this, although you can find it online. But if your gutters are overflowing, it could be that they've got poor slope to them. So that is something to check. I think the easiest thing here to do is to call a gutter guy. Somebody who's good, has good references, good experience, have them take a look at Janesville. You've got a lot of opportunities down there. There's some decent contractors. And they may say, look, we're going to add some slope. We're going to do this. We're going to put a bigger downspout on, and your gutters will be okay. So there's a whole different array of things, more and less expensive, that may solve your problem. But you're going to need professional advice.
So if I have a 4-inch versus a 2-inch, let's say for a rating, 2 versus 4, is it going to cost me that much more to have that extra couple of inches?
You know, Larry,
because the cost is probably in the installation.
Yeah, the installation is really a big part of it. And if we're filling up the window wells and getting water into the basement, and the other thing we have to think about is if we get a heavy rain in the fall and we don't control it and the soil is wet and it freezes, we could end up with a damaged foundation wall. So getting the correct gutters sloped the correct way with the downspouts going out. And rain barrels will do nothing other than concentrate the water in one area of your foundation. We don't want to do that. So, John, Beth, interview a couple people down there, find the one who sounds the smartest, and have them take a look at your house.
And we'll be back with John. He'll be with us for another half hour right after this look at the news. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.
Great to have you with us as we talk home renovation and repair with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, his firm Freiberger and Associates based in Fitchburg. And I hope you'll join the conversation. If you've got questions, home renovation questions, give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@wpr.org. The bottom of the hour, just as a reminder, we'll be talking about hot tubs and maybe pools. If you're interested in a hot tub or a pool, we've got a person that's going to be able to answer all your questions at the bottom of the hour. For now, though, we've got some emails, John. Again, I'll give the number to call. It's 800-642-1234. Philip in Ashland called to recommend, we've been talking windows a little bit, and he called to recommend the high-end H windows, the letter H, capital H, windows made in Wisconsin.
Yes, an excellent window. I have installed them in lake houses, where people are on the west side of the lake and they get, on the east side of the lake and get a lot of western wind. And on some houses, the H really performs well. It is expensive, but very, very high quality. And yes, Phil, that's a good one to recommend.
Jeff emailed to ask if for any ideas or product suggestions to sustainably remove moss from the north side of a garage roof. Sounds like he's already got a bunch there and wants to get rid of it.
Jeff, I want you to call back in 2 months because I have wood shingles, and wood shingles are really expensive. And I've got some moss, and I've got several products I'm going to be testing. So I cannot answer your question now, but I will be able to in 2 months.
Oh, so you're trying different types to see which things to see which works.
Exactly,
back.
some home mixtures and also some things that I found, you know, searching the internet, and we will see how well they work. I have some 25, 30 year old wood shingles that are mossy, so it's going to really be a test. And then I have some new shingles that have a little bit of green on them, so I have an investment, Larry, and my investment will pay off for Jeff if he calls back in 2 months.
Tom emailed to say he recently had a radon test done with the results showing a 4.9 level, which is high. Tom's basement has a 32nd of an inch crack in the concrete from side to side. He wonders if filling the crack with some type of sealant reduces the radon level. Also, he has a drain in the furnace room. Is there a covering for the drain that would help reduce the level?
Now, if the drain is going into the sewer, that does not affect the radon. Now, some old houses have drains in the basement that basically just go into the soil. If that was the case, that could be a very large source of radon. But Tom's not online, so we can't ask him that question. Also can't ask him how old his house is. Newer houses have radon barriers underneath the concrete floors. Older houses do not. Patching a crack, yes, is helpful, but if you're at a 4.9, you're pretty high. 3.8 is the American standard. 2.5 is the European standard. I go by the European standard, so Tom's about double what it should be. There are companies, I don't know where Tom is from because there's an email, but there are companies that specialize in radon mitigation. Often the first consultation is free, and I think I would probably consult a specialist because this could be a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, it could indeed.
The other thing I always recommend, Larry, is the one-day tests. You know, it's sort of like looking at the weather. One day it's sunny, one day it's rainy, and you don't carry an umbrella every day. But there are six-month Alpha Tracker test kits that you can get. I like a midsummer to midwinter, or midwinter to midsummer. So we get all the heating days, the days mm-hmm. the air conditioning furnace is not working, et cetera. And I would go ahead and buy one of those right away. They're under $30. Open it up in your basement. And that goes for any listener that has any concern at all about radon. It's just it gives you a long-term test because Tom may test it again and it's 13. And they may test it again, and it's 2.
Yeah.
So we really need to know what the mean is because that gives us a better idea of what your exposure is.
And what are they called again?
It's a six-month alpha tracker.
Six-month alpha tracker.
So, it's getting, I think I understand it. I think it's you get alpha particles as in the radon decay, and that these hit the substance, and then it's sent back into a lab, and they take a look at it.
Don in Fort Atkinson has a question. Let's go there. Don, hi.
Hi. We had a roof replaced, and they put vents along the ridge and took out the vents in this that were mounted on the top of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it was hot, so I put a thermometer up there and went on a hot day, and it came up at 127 degrees. Is mm-hmm. that unusual?
No, it's not unusual. Now, here's a question for you, Don. Do you have soffit venting?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Are you sure? Because if you have an older house, sometimes I find they've got new metal soffit or newer metal soffit underneath with vents, but then above that they've got plywood and there's no vents in it. So do you have what do you have for soffit venting?
It is. There's about a 2-inch strip that runs the length of the soffit that has screen. The house was built in the 1950s.
Okay.
And that's the venting.
That
it's
sounds
not
like.
Covered up with, it's not covered with insulation.
Good. Okay. And that's the other question. That was probably a retrofit because in the 50s we didn't have much venting. If that is clean, and it could be that you simply have a hot attic. Increasing soffit venting does more than increasing ridge venting. And especially in a 1950s house, too much ridge vent can give you low-pressure area in your attic, and in the winter it can increase your heating bills. So you may want to have a specialist come and look at this. It could be that we need to increase the size of the soffit venting to a 3 or 4-inch screen so that we're getting more low air in. And you have to balance the upper air exit venting with the income venting. This is actually required by code in Wisconsin. So I think you need to talk to an attic venting expert in the Fort Atkinson area, maybe somebody from Madison, and really go over this, do the math, and see if you can lower that temperature. If it's a really hot day and you've got a big roof and it's a dark shingle, 127 wouldn't be that unusual, especially if you have a dark shingle.
Yeah. Don, thank you, and good luck. Appreciate it. Elizabeth in Holcomb, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a musty smell in my basement. We have a walkout lower-level basement. It's a finished basement, at least half of it. And I don't know what I need to do about the musty smell.
Okay, I think you can probably start with a home inspector. I'm a little concerned that we've got high humidity, so we could have some condensation, or we could simply have, as we said earlier, 83% relative humidity growing mold. We could have some leaks through the wall that are causing mold. I think if you take a look again at Wisconsin Association of Home Inspector, InterNACHI Home Inspectors, interview them and say, look, do you know something about mold? And can you come and take a look? They can come and take a look, look for water stains, look for signs of condensation, because if you've got a musty smell, that usually is a fungal issue. So start with that. Home inspectors are pretty inexpensive. They are generalists, and so you need to speak to them because some of them, like myself, have a lot of experience with mold and water. Others don't, although all of them look for it.
They all look for it. Elizabeth, good luck. Thank you. Kathleen and Madison, your turn. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Kat. Hi. I have a 20-year-old condo that has all the original equipment downstairs, like hot water heater, furnace, mm-hmm. air conditioner, conditioner, water conditioner. And my furnace and air conditioner all test out good. And I have not had a problem with either leakage or anything like that. I'm wondering I don't want to spend thousands of dollars getting all new stuff, but I still want to be I'm concerned about water leakage from the hot water heater. It's a 75-gallon tank, and it's a commercial tank was put in here. I'm just wondering what's your opinion of what I should be doing here.
20-year-old equipment is usually during the end of its life. And the problem with furnaces is they don't die on days like this.
No.
They die on New Year's Eve when it's 20 below zero.
Yeah.
And you pay a fortune. And
I've lived that.
Yes. And you don't have time to go to Focus on Energy and look at the rebates, et cetera. You can keep an eye on them, but I would plan to replace them. Are these side vented, that is non-chimney vented water heater and furnaces? Or do they go into a chimney?
I honestly don't know.
Okay. If they are chimney vented, then you're looking at something that's about 80% efficient versus something new that might be 96 to 98% efficient. The same thing with water heaters. My guess is you do not have a side vented water heater. You probably have an open vent water heater. And those are quite inefficient. They're as low as 65%. So I would talk to a good plumber in the Madison area. There are several. And I would talk to a good HVAC company. And again, there are several. Harker, Modern, several of them are very good. They can take a look at your equipment. You can take a look at Focus on Energy. You can take a look at other rebates. They can tell you what the current efficiency is. And they can tell you how much you're going to save on your utilities. But don't push old equipment, because when it fails, it's going to be inopportune and it's going to be expensive. This way, you've got time to plan things out.
Yeah, I like that idea. And it's not going to cost anything for the advice and for the information.
That's right. And you probably have got an old condensing unit that may be very inefficient, may have a very low SEER rating. And take a look at your utility bills. And, you know, do a little bit of studying. Go online, take a look at different things, and let's see if we can make you safe from surprises and lower your utility bills, and maybe get you at least a couple $100 in rebates.
Yeah, good luck, Kathleen. Thank you, Annie in Dalton. Your turn. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I have an old home that I would sure like to get a handle on all those breezes every winter coming through the walls. There is minimal insulation, like something from 1947, so it doesn't work very well. And there is a myriad of people out there that want to sell me insulation. We'd like to use kind of an expanding foam sort of situation, so we don't have to take the walls down.
Right.
Yeah,
so the house was built in 1947. Is that right, Amy?
Yes.
Okay. And so do we know what you have for insulation in the walls?
It's this funny, it's got a tar paper backing, and it's cotton. You can see the cotton seeds.
Yeah,
in it.
And it's probably an inch and a half thick.
Maybe.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty easy to foam around, because you just compress it, and you can get quite a bit of foam in the walls. And what kind of siding do you have on the house?
Right now it's vinyl siding.
Oh, wonderful. Good. Vinyl siding pops right off. You can drill the wall. You can foam the wall, pop the siding back on. Make sure they put a water barrier. If you've got tar paper, which is probably what you have, then you put tar paper over the holes that they drill. So you want to interview some people, and you want to say, once you drill the wall, how do I know I'm not going to get some water through that? And if they give you the right answer, which is tar paper, that will help. Again, I don't know where Dalton is, but see if you can get some money from Focus on Energy. Are you going to do the attic as well?
He wants to.
Yes, good.
What would you recommend for that?
I would recommend having an insulator who has one of the giant vacuum trucks, and they will suck everything out of the attic. All the insulation, all the mouse droppings, all the dead birds, everything goes. Then you're going to use the closed cell spray foam sprayed on top of the plaster or drywall below. That is going to give you the vapor barrier you never had, the air barrier and the air sealing you never had before, plus R14 insulation, and then you put more insulation over that. You may find you reduce your heating bills by 40%. So that's very helpful. And again, Focus on Energy to see if you are in an area with a utility that is cooperating with the program so that you can get some money back. interview at least three people. There's some real fly-by-nighters in the insulation business, and I think you've already figured that out from what you said. So what is Dalton near?
We are 15 minutes northeast of Partyville, if that helps. Or we are 20 minutes almost due east of Portage.
Okay, due east of Portage. All right, so at least you're near Portage. You might even get some Madison people willing to come that far. Do some research. Do some research on foam, but don't insulate over old insulation in attics is a general rule, okay?
All right, there you go. Thank you so much, Annie. Appreciate it. And Lee in Green Bay, we turn to you.
Yes, thank you. I have an old home built sometime around 1900, stone foundation. When I have heavy, heavy rains, you know, sometimes it overflows the gutters.
Yeah.
I get minor seepage at certain areas down in the basement. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of in these certain areas of digging away the soil on the outside of the home and doing a little bit of like masonry work. I know you've got a special recipe for the old stone. And can I put a sealant over that once it is completely set up? You know, some type of a sealant.
Yes and no. It is hazardous to dig out old stone foundations on the exterior because sometimes the lime-based mortar that they used back then is simply gone. And what you can do is you're going to dig down. There's just nothing there but loose stones. And they fall into the trench as you dig it. So it's a little worrisome. I would be more inclined at this point to invest in bigger gutters, longer downspouts, if you have space, and some houses don't because they're built too close to the ground. Add a little soil so you get some drainage. Stone foundations, you really have to know what you're doing. And they can get horribly expensive. I've done some historic ones where there was a big budget. But on one of them, we got down 5 feet. We couldn't go seven because we would have had to replace everything. So I would avoid exterior work, and I would work on water control first. And if you get a couple little leaks in the basement, if this is an unfinished basement, so what? Mine occasionally leaks, and I have nothing down there but a little bit of wine and a furnace. And I go, well, it's leaked for 100 years. Let it leak for another 100. But be very cautious about working on the outside of stone foundations.
Yeah, that's good. Very good advice. We've got more callers on that, and we have time to maybe get to some more. But you had a question for me, John, that I wanted to hear about.
Well, Larry, in the last 17 years of working with you, which is 100 and some programs, and the 10,823 programs I've listened to when I wasn't a guest, I've never heard you flustered. Always have the immediate reply. You're always on top of it. But there must be some time in the past when I wasn't listening where you had an author, an engineer, a professor, or whatever, and you went,
Well,
who was it and what happened?
That's... Now, let me think about it. I guess the sort of the worst show that I remember is I had a person on. This is many years back. And he came on the show, and I don't even remember now what we were talking about. But he had some papers in front of him, but, most people do. But we don't, you might refer to them once in a while. But in this case, I asked the guy a question. He ignored my question and started reading a whole prepared statement that he had about his company and his business and the problems that he was overcoming, and he wouldn't be quiet. And I'm normally a kind of I got to the point where I even tried to, and when I tried to break in, he'd hold his hand up at me. And I had to terminate that interview early.
Wow, I missed that one.
That was the hardest thing I ever had to do on
Good
the air,
heavens.
I think, was just to say, you know what, this just isn't working. You're not paying attention to what I'm saying, and you're not talking about what we were prepared to talk about. Mm. And I had to terminate that. And I don't remember even how I covered the rest of that show, but I covered it. And it was what I said, it probably wasn't great, but it was better than what I was getting from that particular guest, who, of course, never darkened the door again.
Needless to say.
needless to say. And that just popped into my head, that very terrible memory. Oh, man. So that was my... And that was before you started. So it was more than 17.
It's a long time ago. Well, Larry, speaking of happy memories, you have given us so many happy memories over the years. Sitting across from you, I love coming in because I get to see you.
Yeah.
And you are as happy and well-settled a human being as you sound like on the air. I can tell your listeners that it is not fake. And I do listen to you religiously. It's been a great enjoyment. I hope you have a wonderful retirement. And I can tell you, you are going to be profoundly missed by those of us who are both guests and listeners, as well as the listeners in Wisconsin.
Well, thank you, John. And I will also mention that with John, John has told me that he often spends more a day answering emails that he receives as a result of this show. So he takes the boundaries of the campus and of the state and extension work very seriously. I mean, he's not an extension guy, but he is an extension guy.
I think many of us who are educated here at Madison, and this is where I did master's and PhD work, love the university the way you do, and I really want to reach out and help listeners honor their questions and keep them engaged.
Well, and his email is frei@chorus.net, and it's been a pleasure working with John, and I don't know why my voice has all suddenly gotten so bad, but it has. John Freiberger, registered home inspector, and you're not going away.
I am not going away, at least for a while.
You'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do it all over again.
We will.
Or, except I won't be me, it'll be Lee. And that's okay. Thank you. And coming up, we're going to talk about hot tubs and pools. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. You know, somewhere around 7 million or maybe even a little over 7 million Americans own a hot tub, and they keep their hot tubs for a fair amount of time, at least on average. I think it's seven and a half years they'll have it. Maybe they move, maybe who knows what happens. But summer's a fun time to have a hot tub, and so is winter for that matter. I had a friend with a hot tub, and there's nothing like getting into the hot tub when it's, I don't know, zero or so, and it's a nice, kind of nice place to sit and relax. We're going to be talking about hot tubs and a little bit about swimming pools as well with our next guest, Tommy Kempfer. Tommy's assistant general manager of sales for the company Patio Pleasures Pools and Spas in Sun Prairie. Patio Pleasures Pools and Spas. Say that 10 times quick. But it's a kind of a cool name. It describes what they do. So we're going to have some fun talking with Tommy, and I hope you'll join in. Do you have a hot tub? Do you use it regularly? Do you have a pool do you use regularly? Or maybe there's things you wish you knew before you bought a hot tub. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Tommy Kempfer joining us by phone. Tommy, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, hi, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you guys, you sell a lot, hot tubs, pools, and other things, and saunas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're correct. From top to bottom in popularity, I guess I'll say hot tubs is our number one because they're year-round. More seasonally, we sell pools and a lot of patio furniture. We sell saunas. We sell cold plunges, which are kind of a thing, a trendy thing these days as well. So everything kind of centers around wellness. So whatever you can do to help make you feel better, sleep better, you know, all the benefits of the products we sell.
You know, I went online and I looked at your site and, you know, the About Us and who's working there. And there you have 28 photos of the main folks. And I was looking at what do they each do, and three of them are wellness coordinators and or wellness consultants. And I thought, that's interesting. And you may not be expecting this question, but that's 10% of your staff working on as wellness consultants. What do they do?
Yeah, interestingly enough, we actually have three wellness consultants at each of our two locations. So we have a location in Sun Prairie. We also have one in Madison, and each location has three wellness consultants, which is really our primary sales team. And so with a focus on wellness and an emphasis on delivering that through the products that we sell, their titles are applicable in a sense that we help find the reason our products and the ways our products can help provide that wellness to people. Wellness isn't always the primary reason people buy our products, but it's one of the most popular, and it's ultimately a side benefit, even if you're buying it for entertainment or relaxation or some other aspect. Wellness is just kind of an awesome additional perk, if you will, of everything we sell.
Yeah. And what about affordability on hot tubs? How affordable are they?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a question that will vary depending on who you're asking. But we carry two primary brands, which is Bullfrog Hot Tubs and Caldera Hot Tubs, both in the top few in the world as far as popularity and luxury. So there's 75, 78 different brands of hot tubs available, you know, that across the world. And the ones we focus on are because we believe that they provide the best value from a luxury product. So this is not an entry-level, basic, you know, less expensive option like you can find elsewhere. But the reason we carry these brands is because they're built for Wisconsin. They're built in the United States, and they're built for Wisconsin. And what I mean by that is they're built with efficiency in mind, the insulation, the comfort, the power from the jets, all of that is built in mind, where when it gets to be 0 degrees or colder, your electric bill and heating bill doesn't skyrocket. And obviously, yeah, you'll notice it, but it doesn't, you know, it's built to withhold that heat, kind of like your water heater at home. You know, mm-hmm. It heats it up and then it holds it. So that's one of the big reasons we sell these. And there's some unique elements and patented products within our brands that make them one of a kind, and that's why people love them.
You know, we're talking about holding the heat, and I think Brad in Janesville has a question relating to that. Let's just go there. Brad, hi.
Hi. I've had hot tubs for 30 years. I love them. Use them all year long in Wisconsin. I was told once that there's a federal standard for both public use and private use hot tubs that doesn't allow the temperature
to be set higher than 104 degrees Fahrenheit. I would like to set my hot tub at 106. It's perfectly safe temperature, but I'm stymied and unable to do that. Is there any way, any exception to that that I can find?
Brad, that's a great question, and my understanding of it is that it's dependent on the manufacturer on whether or not the spa is built and designed capable of going to 106. For example, our Bullfrog spa lineup, the standard setting only allows it to go to 104, but you can override that up to 106 by holding down the temperature up button. So traditionally, you just push it, tap it to increase or decrease the temperature. But once you get to 104, if you hold down on the up arrow for a couple seconds, it allows you to override that standard up to 106. Now, depending on the brand that you have, it may or may not be capable of that. But everything you've said is correct as far as my understanding as well. But there is an override to that next level safe but not recommended per se. Temperature, but teach their own on what their preference is.
You know, and I was, thanks again, Brad, for calling, by the way. I was thinking or looking, reading a little bit about it, and I think the average most people have around 100 to 102 degrees for their hot tubs. At least that's what I read, anyway. I'm not sure if that's true. Is that about what you're experiencing? And I also, just to add to that question, typically, it may be a little cooler if you have young children.
Yep, that's very well said. You kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think the majority of our customers set it between 100 and 102 because it allows them to stay in it longer because you can kind of get pretty warm. Obviously, your body temperature should be or normally is right around 98, 98.6. So the longer you sit in water that's warmer than that, naturally your body temperature will rise. And when we tie in wellness to this, and I'm gonna take this across from not just hot tubs but also saunas with the strategy of increasing your body temperature by being in an environment that's warmer than your body temperature. It's designed to kind of simulate what happens when your body gets sick. So when you get sick, your body raises its temperature so that your body can naturally fight off whatever's going on. You know, your immune system kicks in and you get a fever. That's kind of the symptom, is a high body temperature. Well, that's your body basically fixing the problems. So when you get in hot water or in a sauna, the idea is it raises your body temperature and you're kind of simulating that fever to help strengthen and build your immune system along with your, not just your immunity, but also your metabolism and all the other elements that come with these wellness benefits. So when it comes to sitting at 100 or 102, as opposed to 104, you know, until you have one, you might think, oh, what's another 2 degrees? Big deal. You know, if it's 75 degrees outside and goes to 77, I hardly notice. Well, if you sit in 100 degree hot tub water and it goes up to 102 or 104, you notice. It's kind of amazing. But it's all a personal preference. It's whatever is comfortable for you. And, you know, there's plenty of people who like 100 and there's plenty of people who like 104, but the science says that 104 is that sweet spot. It's that top out where when you get your body temperature up, it maximizes the wellness benefits, assuming the comfort level is still there and you can kind of stand it.
Someone's wondering here, is there a maximum number of people who should be in a hot tub at one time?
Hmm. Again, that's personal preference. There's a safety element, I guess you could say, but that's all. There's not any sort of regulation or standard. You know, it's people get pretty cozy in a hot tub. When you think about bodies of water, in a pool, if you were to compare putting a pool filling a pool with people and everybody's kind of shoulder to shoulder versus in a hot tub, it's totally different. Like, it'd be awkward in a pool because you expect to need space and you want to move around. But in a hot tub, for whatever reason, we get pretty comfortable sitting in hot water real close to people, you know, whether you have one at home or you've been in the hotel pool or whatnot. It's interesting, the dynamic and mentality of sitting in a hot tub. I wouldn't say there's any sort of rule against it, or it's more so your comfort level. But when it comes to water balancing, water chemistry, water cleanliness, you know, hot tub maintenance and keeping the water clean and sanitized, you just take a different approach to that, especially if you're consistently putting multiple people in the hot tub.
Yeah. Tommy Kempfer, our guest, he's the assistant general manager of sales for Patio Pleasures, Pools, and Spas in Sun Prairie, our guest. Questions for him, give a call, the number 800-642-1234. You could email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Tommy Kempfer, Assistant General Manager of Sales for Patio Pleasures, Pools, and Spas. Patio Pleasures, Pools, and Spas, their business, Sun Prairie and Madison, they have an office as well. So great to have him with us. And again, questions 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Mentioned chemicals, we mentioned a little bit. I mean, chemical treatments are needed for hot tubs? Water?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the key is to keep your water clean, sanitized, clear from an optic standpoint. It feels a lot better when you get into a body of water that, you know, is clean and clear. And then balanced, which is you can't always see, but balanced meaning like the pH level is at a comfortable, neutral level. And that takes a little bit of work. It's not meant to be a lot of work, but you can't ignore it for a long period of time because it's a bowl of hot water, and if you kind of leave it unattended, things could get out of hand.
Yeah. So, and people are up, you always hear, oh, I wish I could do it without chemicals, but pretty much you need chemicals, do you not?
Yeah, and it's not that you need a ton, but it's all circumstantial. You know, it has something to do with what your fill water is like, meaning what comes out of your spigot when you fill it up. Most hot tubs are outdoors, though some are indoors or in garages. But a traditional hot tub is outside, and you usually have a spigot on the outside of the house, and that's oftentimes how you'll fill your hot tub. And depending on where you live, your water might be high in alkalinity or high in calcium or metals, and there's other elements of water that oftentimes need to be balanced with some chemicals, typically. But once you get that balance, it's just a matter of keeping it balanced and just kind of keeping the train on the tracks, which doesn't oftentimes require a ton of time, energy, or chemicals, but you do have to pay attention to it so it doesn't get too far out of hand.
Scott in Elko has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Larry. I'm looking at a used hot tub, and I want to know what I should be looking for as far as insulation around the hot tub for northern Wisconsin climate. And can I add more insulation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, anytime you're buying a used hot tub, it's really no different than buying anything used. You want to do your homework and due diligence. Standard questions or things I would look for is you want to look to see if there's any evidence of leaking, any evidence of rodents, like mice got in it or some other sort of critter that might have chewed up some wires or done some damage. Those are maybe standard things you'd look for aside from general damage and functionality. Insulation-wise, I think most manufacturers are going to tell you they don't recommend adding insulation, and they're going to, suggest that what they put in there is adequate, and that's certainly debatable depending on what type of insulation they have. Adding additional insulation is absolutely up to you. It can oftentimes add a level of or increase the efficiency of it by maintaining heat. You just want to be careful not to insulate around equipment. So traditionally, the front of a hot tub is where the pump and heater and any other additional features or functions and equipment that the hot tub might have. You want to avoid putting anything too close to those. Manufacturers won't put insulation in the front because pumps and heaters get so hot that it could become a fire hazard or an issue otherwise.
That makes sense. And as long as we're talking about insulation, Jenny in Oconomowoc emailed to ask about a spa cover. She says, how long should a spa cover last? And what tips do you have for making them last?
Yep, awesome question. So a traditional hot tub cover has a strong internal foam core. Now, you can get different styles. You can get inflatable covers. You can get high-end covers that last the life of the spa, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. But a traditional cover should last you anywhere from 2 to 5 years, okay? What makes them last longer is based on what's coming from the top and what's coming from the bottom. And what I mean by that is if it's outside and it's getting pounded by the elements of Wisconsin, the rain, sleet, snow, hail, everything that comes throughout the year, that can certainly degrade the integrity of the cover from the top side or the outside. Now, from the underside, which is more often where it gets its, where it kind of takes on the challenge, is the water chemistry can play a role on eating away or water getting into that insulated core, because let's face it, water finds its way into things pretty easily. And with a hot water and evaporation and condensation, it wants to get inside there. They're built to keep it out, but when your hot water coming from the underside and then the elements from the top side, over time, they get some wear and tear. Now, the best way to lengthen the life of it is really more so based on how well you take care of your water and what you do while you're treating your water. And here's a perfect example. When you're oxidizing your tub or shocking your tub, as in adding a concentrated dose of chlorine or oxidizing shock or something of that nature, those work most effectively by doing their work, killing the contaminants, taking care of the problems, and then gassing out. So a common mistake that hot tub owners might make is adding those concentrated doses and then closing the cover. And that kind of traps all that in, and when it tries to gas off, it's getting trapped by the cover, and it kind of slowly eats away at not just the underside of the cover, but also if you have pillows like headrests inside of it, it can take a toll on those as well. So best thing to do is when you're dosing the tub with some sort of chemical, especially a sanitizer or oxidizer, open the lid and leave it open for at least 20-30 minutes.
Oh, makes good sense. Brad in Fall River has a question. Hi, Brad.
Hey, I was just calling in because I've been thinking about getting a hot tub recently, but there are just so many brands that are out there. What's the biggest difference between like a cheaper big box store that I can get for really cheap and then what, you know, something that Patio Pleasures, I think, would carry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question, Brad. In an inexpensive spa, I'll just label it that way, in the, let's call it, $3,000 to $8,000 range, just to try to put a range and a price on it, those spas are typically designed to last 4 to 5 years. The insulation is going to likely be a thin, shiny, just strip on the inside of each panel. And the theory would be, oh, the heat from the equipment will be trapped inside and it kind of keeps itself warm. But we all kind of know how that is. It's like putting a spring jacket on in the middle of winter. So it's insulation is one of the big key factors. The other thing that makes those other hot tubs less expensive is they put a ton of jets in them. And what they're really doing is putting a ton of holes in the spa shell. And the pumps are oftentimes smaller and less expensive. The horsepower might be there, but it's trying to put way more water through way more jets with the same size pump. also with a lack of insulation, all the plumbing is not supported. It's just kind of hanging there. And if you've ever owned a hot tub or even just seen one, when you turn it on, there's like this big rush of water. It's like, whoosh, it just kicks that water in. And every time that pump kicks on, those plumbing lines shake, they kind of vibrate. And what you'd oftentimes see with those less expensive spas is without that support, those plumbing lines pull loose and they pull loose out of the shell, and that's where you get your leaks. And so we see more issues and problems with those less expensive spas. And really, by the time you take, let's call it a $5,000 to $8,000 spa, and you buy three of them, you've bought our hot tubs because ours are going to last, they're designed to last 15 to 20 years. And the warranties are longer. When you pay more for a hot tub, you're oftentimes paying for a warranty as much as you are the quality. I could probably spend another 20 minutes answering this question, but for the sake of brevity, I'll kind of stop there.
Brad, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. And another person wondering if you can use salt water in a hot tub to lessen chemicals and maintenance.
That's a fantastic question. One of the most common questions we get. And interestingly, when I mentioned we carry Bullfrog and Caldera, Bullfrog features on a chlorine-based sanitization system, but it uses about 75% less chlorine than a traditional hot tub. And I know the question was about salt, so I'll stop there. But chlorine with Bullfrog, and then our Caldera line is salt-ready, so it's a saltwater hot tub. So we have both options, and salt is a super popular way to go about it. A lot of people have saltwater pools, and they notice that soft water feeling, and it's an option to sanitize your water where you don't have to change the water out as frequently, as in like drain all of it, the hot tub water, and start over. Salt lasts longer, if that makes sense, in the water, to sanitize it longer so you don't have to drain it and refill it as often. But with our Caldera line, salt water is a popular choice, and it's really just a more natural way to sanitize your water. So it doesn't necessarily use significantly less chemicals, but it takes salt and converts it to chlorine and sanitizes it appropriately. The chemical compound of salt is NaCl, right? So the Cl is sort of the chlorine element of it. But it's a great option, and it's really popular here. We sell a lot of it.
One of the things I read online from when it came to hot tubs was one of the first things an owner should do is read the owner's manual carefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's of course that's recommended. Most of them are just under 80 pages, so no, it's a late night. No, they're not that bad, but no, that's great. But also, I'd put a kind of a shameless plug in by saying that's what we're also here for. You know, we've got a team full of experts in both of our locations. We offer free water testing, so we encourage you to bring a sample of your water, whether you bought the hot tub from us or not. Bring in a sample of your water, and we run it in our very expensive testing system, and it provides a report that says, you know, your alkalinity looks like this, your pH looks like this, your calcium looks like this, et cetera, et cetera. And we can provide a recipe to either keep it clean or bring it back around if you're having any issues, along with a bunch of troubleshooting issues we can tackle. But that's kind of what we're here for, not just the sale, but the service and, you know, everything beyond.
Well, and on that note, we're out of time, Tommy. I want to thank you so much. We didn't get through everything I had for questions, and we still have emailers with questions as well, so perhaps we can get you back down the road. Thank you so much.
You betcha. You're welcome.
Tommy Kempfer is Assistant General Manager of Sales for Patio Pleasures, Pools, and Spas in Sun Prairie. It's great to have him with us. Big thanks to you for listening, and big thanks, as always, to our team, Clara Neiper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer, of course, is Jill Nadol. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you for listening again, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.